Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. Recreational marijuana has been a moneymaker for Ohio, racking up nearly $300 million since sales started 7 months ago. But not every town welcomes dispensaries. More than 50 municipalities have bans or moratoriums in place. Governor DeWine wants to double the tax, and Republicans are working to dismantle what voters approved in 2023. Joining us now is reporter Sarah Donaldson with the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. Welcome back to All Sides, Sarah.
Hey, good to be here.
So voters approved recreational marijuana by 57% back in 2023. So people might be wondering why the state legislature can make any changes to something that voters passed.
Yeah, so it's important to remember that back in 2023, there were two ballot issues. There was issue one, and it was on abortion. That was a constitutional amendment. Issue two, the marijuana issue, wasn't a constitutional amendment. It was an initiated statute, which is a different way for voters to go directly to the ballot, or I guess, coalition of voters to go to the ballot, put something on the ballot, and ask the rest of voters, hey, what do you think about this? But because it's an initiated statute.
Which initiated statute is like a written law, right?
Exactly. Okay. It's a law that the voters have passed, but lawmakers get the final say. So they can make changes. I mean, back in 2023, there was this question, and lawmakers have since said they're not going to do this. But lawmakers could literally vote to repeal legalization of marijuana in its entirety because it doesn't have that extra backing being in the Constitution.
So rather than repealing it, the Republican majority legislature has zeroed in on a few components that they'd like to change. So the latest bill is from Senator Steve Huffman, and it would gut parts of what the voters approved. So we're going to take with Sarah, we're going to walk through some of the proposed changes. One of them is lowering the THC level in adult use marijuana from a maximum of 90% to a maximum of 70%. Now, Steve Huffman's a medical doctor. Is that influencing the THC level with him in this bill? And tell me about like what it means to lower the THC level.
So lowering the THC level just means that the product that you're consuming is not as concentrated. So if you think in terms of alcohol, it's more like beer, less like wine, if that makes sense.
Okay.
But they're lowering the top level concentrations for both extract and concentrate products. So when folks are using like vaporizers and also in plant products. I think that plant number is different. I think it's around 35% or something around there. I think there is a concern from lawmakers that I've heard. I know when issue two first passed, Governor Mike DeWine was talking about how, you know, it's not your grandfather's marijuana. The products that are being sold in dispensaries are much more concentrated than historically marijuana has been. And that is true. There is more concentrated marijuana out being sold in retail stores than marijuana was as concentrated, if that makes sense,
yeah,
historically. But there is a concern on the flip side from the industry. Medical users need a certain level of concentration in their products. And also, if you lower the concentrate, obviously it takes more product to get high. So is this just going to push people to Michigan where they can buy cheaper products that have higher concentrate levels?
Okay, so a neighboring state does have the higher concentrate level. The number that Ohio passed in their initiated statute didn't come from nowhere. It's like,
no, and on top of that, and I think Ohio's level was pretty high, but when you add those ceilings, I mean, earlier on in this process, because lawmakers, this hasn't happened overnight that this bill has come out, as you said, lawmakers have been trying to make changes to issue two basically since it passed in 2023. They had a much lower ceiling that they wanted to pass. I think this is kind of a middle ground, but I know that Democrats have already said they're opposed to this cap on the concentrate levels.
And then another provision, and it involves homegrown plants, reducing a single resident from 12 plants to 6. This has also been a source of back and forth, like you mentioned, with several versions of this bill. How do you control how many plants people have in their house?
I think a lot of people have questions about that. And so what it does is right now it's 6 per person, but 12 per household. So if you have 2 or 3 adults living in a household, you could have up to 12 plants. This brings it to 6 per household. I don't necessarily know how it would be. Of course, it falls on law enforcement because once
Senator Huffman's going to knock on all your doors.
Yeah, I mean, it falls on law enforcement. I think, you know, it would be hard for someone to say, oh, you have 7 plants instead of 6. But I think the target is, you know, lawmakers have expressed that they're concerned that people are taking advantage of this home grow provision because home grow is meant to be, you grow it at home, you enjoy it at home, you're not gifting it to other people or selling it to other people, which the law prohibits.
So the bill to change the marijuana law, as I mentioned, is sponsored by Republican Senator Steve Huffman. Here he is talking about why he's in favor of some of these changes.
In short, this bill is about government efficiency, consumer and child safety, and maintaining access to voter approval adult use marijuana.
Now, we did reach out to invite Senator Huffman to be on today's show, but he's involved with the response team dealing with flooding in Kentucky, so he was unable to join us today. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about proposed changes to recreational marijuana policy with Sarah Donaldson, reporter for the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. So I wanted to get into a little bit about the tax, because this has changed very recently. The bill would increase the tax on recreational marijuana, but the governor has also proposed doubling the tax, but that is in the budget bill. What has changed? Something has changed recently with the tax.
Yeah, so the bill that Senator Steve Huffman put forward was amended on Tuesday. It no longer includes any tax changes, so nothing to the structure of where the taxes go, no increase on the excise tax. That's not to say it's gone. Committee Chair Senator Christina Rogner told me on Tuesday that they are just leaving that portion to the budget process. Governor Mike DeWine has said, this is what I want done with the taxes. So they want that portion worked out in the budget process rather than worked out in a separate bill like this.
So, yeah, so there's the initiated statute that was passed does say where the tax money goes, right? And so either way, if this would have stayed in the bill or if Governor DeWine's budget has it in there, it does involve changing where the money goes, though, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it makes pretty significant changes to the tax structure and, of course, also just the taxing on it. I think Governor DeWine has proposed doubling the excise tax from 10% to 20%. Mm-hmm. And I know at one point lawmakers were talking about 15%. So we'll see where they fall. But, you know, you're talking about increasing the excise tax. And then also, there's a lot of frustration among groups that were potentially benefiting from the legalization of marijuana. And one that I'll point to are local governments. So I interviewed a township trustee out in Hamilton County who said, you know, I've never smoked marijuana, but I told, you know, my township residents, hey, we should let a dispensary set up shop here because as part of the law that was passed, 36% of the tax revenue under issue 2 was set to go to host communities, host communities of dispensaries. So he said, you know, this could help fund our police department or other city services. Well, right now, under the budget, that host communities fund is gone. A lot of it goes back to the state. So I think there's some frustration from locals that it's like all this tax revenue is being redirected back to the state. And, you know, I've heard from locals that on one side, Governor Mike DeWine has made it very clear he's against, or he was against, the legalization of recreational marijuana. He's said he understands that's what voters want. But a lot of lawmakers say, well, voters didn't really vote on the tax structure. They voted to legalize recreational marijuana. So it's okay if we move the tax structure around.
So I have a cut from who you talked to, David Kubicki. I don't know.
David Kubicki.
David Kubicki, president of the Columbia Township Trustees in Hamilton County. Here's what he had to say regarding the taxes.
I'm just mortified that the state can just come in and change the rules. It's like somebody saying, I'm going to take your lunch money. And you're like, well, you're not allowed to. And it's like, no, we are.
So he is upset because he is expecting this money. And now Governor DeWine wants it to go into the state general fund instead of these individual communities.
Yeah. And so there was one proposal to go into the state general fund. I think the proposal that DeWine has put forward comes from that 2023 initial attempt at an overhaul that never really moved anywhere. Some of what I've heard from Governor DeWine and what's in the budget is that money is being redirected to like local jails construction. Lawmakers are trying to find a consistent funding source for like police training. So the argument that I've heard from someone like Senate President Rob McCauley, who I talked to yesterday, is, you know, this money is still going to benefit local communities because we're investing in their police forces by providing training. But at the end of the day, that money is still going more toward the state than it is. I mean, that's my wording. It is not going directly to those municipalities mm-hmm. under what Governor DeWine is proposing.
So back to the bill that is working its way through committees in the Senate, Huffman's bill. It will cap active dispensaries at 350. Right now, there's about 128 or so dispensaries active in the state. So obviously, I guess more dispensaries are trying to get licenses daily as fast as the Ohio Department of Commerce can work. So, but this puts a cap on 350. Do you know if that was in the initiated statute, the number?
I don't believe there was a cap in the initiated statute. And I know when I asked Senator Huffman about it, he said he would budge on that number. But this idea is coming from, again, I believe Michigan, but there have been some states when they've legalized recreational marijuana that so many dispensaries have popped up that the market just becomes completely oversaturated. Mm. So, I mean, you know, I think it's a little bit of government trying to make sure that the capitalism system is working and that there's competition and there's not just, I mean, too much competition creates this oversaturation issue. But I haven't heard as much about where they're going to land on that. And like you said, I mean, right now, all of the dispensaries that are licensed are dual use dispensaries. Mm-hmm. So they started as medical marijuana dispensaries and added on their recreational licensure. So it remains to be seen how many recreational dispensaries are going to open up over the next couple of years to try and get that licensure.
And if the Department of Commerce has to change all the regulations that they've been working to put in place, right?
Yeah.
Because that's probably a part of it. We did reach out to the Ohio Department of Commerce, the cannabis division, and they said that they're working through to see what happens with this law first before they're going to talk about it, right? So there's been there were other versions of this bill. This has died in the General Assembly, I guess, last year. So do you know why they didn't finish it up?
Yeah. So last year, I would say the Senate bill passed the day before recreational marijuana actually went legal. Mm. So voters voted in November and then they passed this in December 2023, the day before legalization, the Senate did. And it was Democrats voted for it, too, because they had some expungement provisions that they got in there and they were happy with how the bill turned out. But it just ended up negotiations really broke down over in the House. And I think it's partially because, of course, House Speaker Jason Stevens was a different speaker than House Speaker Matt Huffman, who is the speaker right now, is going to be. Matt Huffman was Senate president mm-hmm. when this first version of the bill passed. He's probably going to be supportive of this bill. Stevens never said outright he wasn't supportive of the bill, but he said that there was a lot of debate in the House Republican caucus about what to do with this bill, because although a lot of Republicans opposed the legalization of recreational marijuana, there are other Republicans, namely in more rural districts like down in Southeast Ohio, who realize that this could be a real benefit to their communities. I mean, there are grow operations down in these rural communities. So mm-hmm. I think that there's a balance here, because even if you're maybe personally opposed to marijuana, there is a money aspect to this, too. So it remains to be seen if the House is going to have that same type of hang up that they had last legislative session, but I imagine it's going to move a lot quicker this year.
Okay, so you expect it to pass the Senate soon. It's finished committee hearings, right? And then yes. It'll move to the House.
Yeah, so they'll have one more hearing on it next week, likely. I mean, of course, anything can happen. I don't have a crystal ball, but there is a hearing scheduled next week. They'll likely vote on it next week in committee. And then Senate President Rob McCauley said It'll probably pass the Senate next week with minor to medium changes from what we're seeing right now. So there could still be some more amendments on deck. He described them again as minor to medium yesterday.
Minor to medium.
So we'll see. Yeah. I'm thinking like medium rare.
Does that mean? Yeah.
But it's very likely to pass the Senate. And we've just seen already, I mean, you've also seen this with the higher education bill. The Senate's been moving really quick. I mean, we're only a month and a half into, I guess, going on 2 months into this next legislative session, and big bills are already moving. So I imagine it's going to move a lot faster than it did last legislative session.
Well, we'll have to bring you back whenever it's being debated in the House so you can talk about those medium rare changes. Thank you, Sarah Donaldson, reporter for the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And coming up, we're going to talk with an Ohio State law professor whose research center studies marijuana policy here and across the U.S. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. A First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. When voters approved Issue 2 in November of 2023, Ohio became the 24th state to legalize adult-use cannabis, with 57% of voters approving. In August, dual-use dispensaries opened their doors to recreational sales. And the Republican-led General Assembly has been working since then to make changes. Joining us now is Douglas Berman, Executive Director of the Drug Enforcement and Policy Center at Ohio State's Moritz College of Law. Welcome to All Sides, Douglas.
Thank you, Amy.
So in the last segment, we walked through some of the main provisions of Senator Huffman's bill to make changes to the initiated statute that passed. So I'm wondering how these proposed changes stack up with other states when it comes to adult-use marijuana.
One of the things that's so interesting about how cannabis policy has played out in the states is there's incredible variation, partially because, and I think you were talking about this in the earlier segment, sometimes it's been done by a constitutional amendment through the initiative process. And so in states where that's happened, whatever they have gets locked in to their constitution, and it's very hard for the legislatures to change it. In a number of other states, we've seen legislative reform, and then there's often some tinkering and changing. But usually at the margins, often the debate happens before the initial bill gets passed to work through a lot of the policy issues that are coming up in this round of legislative debate. And the fascinating part of what Ohio's experienced is we got a legislative initiative, which meant that this becomes the law upon voter passage, but then the General Assembly has broad authority to change it around. And they've proposed a lot of different things. And I often tell my students, and I think it's so true in this context, these are all very hard policy issues. And then they're layered on top of a lot of politics, which also can be challenging, both, you know, simple, are you for or against, you know, marijuana reform, but then also sort of really complicated, how should markets function? And of course, that's where, especially for a Republican-led General Assembly, you think they're going to be mostly more pro-market, more sort of business development. But when it comes to something that's seen as a problematic product like marijuana, they often can be less supportive of a broader market or a more robust market. And so we've seen that play out in states around the country. What Ohio's been doing is sort of in the mainstream, but we actually have a lot of reports at our center that highlights that there's real wide variation, whether it's tax rates, whether it's where the tax money gets used, whether it's how many licenses there are. It's very hard to sort of say summarily this is the way most states are doing it, because there's really everything over the map.
Okay, so let's start with one issue of how does Ohio compare, talking about taxes. So Sarah Donaldson mentioned in the first segment that the tax structure was in this bill that's being debated right now, and it was pulled out, and they said that they were going to let Governor DeWine's budget handle that. So that means that things could change, but in Governor DeWine's proposal, he wanted to double the tax from 10% to 20%. and he's changing where the taxes go. But I guess first let's talk about the 10%, the doubling of the tax. Is that a lot of tax compared to other states?
It will be if we go to that 20%. And I think some of the background here was that the initiative was written with a 10% special tax on adult use marijuana, in part because that's the tax rate that Michigan currently has, and concern that if you set a higher tax
rate. We always want to be like Michigan,
well,
right?
Yeah, you want to beat Michigan for sure, but maybe not beat them with higher taxes. I think the industry's long been concerned that people would go up to Michigan if the price points were too high. And as it's been true, in part because Michigan's had a more developed market for years, already product is cheaper in Michigan relative to what we've seen in an early market like Ohio. And so that 10% tax rate was set, I think, mostly in line with Michigan initially, and that was on the kind of lower end of states across the country, but kind of in sort of the middle section of the lower end. There's a few states that have much lower tax rates, and then there are a few states, California, Washington state in particular, has a 30 to 40% tax on their marijuana. And so being at 10% puts us kind of at the lower level, but not kind of outside the sort of majority approach. Going up to 15% would put us in kind of the top quarter of states, and going up to 20% as a special excise tax would really put us, you know, just behind, I think, one or two other states that have high tax burdens. Again, it's unclear how that will affect markets, how different purchasers will adjust to that. And that's one of the concerns, is we don't really quite know even how Ohio's market is functioning with its existing tax. If we increase it, we'll probably see an impact, but unclear how much.
Right, because most, I mean, you know, a dispensary would probably pass the tax on and increase the price of the product. They'll pass it on to the customer, right?
That's certainly the expectation,
yes,
and I think that's likely to be the
that's
case.
That's economics, yeah. But then we don't know if that's going to cause less people to buy it, because we don't have enough information on how many people are buying it anyway. It hasn't been around long enough.
That's part of the story, and we're trying to collect good data. That's what our center tries to do a lot, is really study this and see if we can compare. And, of course, a huge part of this story as well is Ohio has Michigan to the north that has legalized marijuana at that 10% tax rate, but then all of our other neighboring states don't have recreational marijuana, and so it may be the case, and this may be part of what Governor DeWine is thinking. Hey, folks who are going to be driving to Ohio to get legal product from other states, they'll be willing to pay whatever the tax is. And so why not try to move that up and hope that we can get more revenue, maybe not even from Ohio citizens, but to then fund his
priorities. From Pennsylvania, West Virginia.
Exactly.
Because that's closer than Michigan for those states. Okay. So then let's talk about where the tax will go. So that is also changing. So the initiated statute said the tax would go to individual communities, right?
Yeah, so there were four funds if we include the money that would go in a fund to just run the program. But three big funds for the tax revenues involved host communities. That's what the localities that were hosting these dispensaries and other facilities. Then there was what's called the Social Equity and Job Fund, which was always a target from the Republicans. It's like, what are you putting money there? That seems too wokey, for lack of a better word. But that's what many states have done. And we did some other reports about looking where tax money goes. And it's quite common across the nation for money to be invested back into the community, not just the local communities running these businesses, but other social needs. And that's what the initiated statute provided for through the Social Equity and Jobs Fund. And then there was also a substance abuse fund as well that was going to dedicate money specifically to those causes. And again, the voters passed that overwhelmingly. I think where the money was allocated was probably a part of people's thinking, especially if they're not cannabis users, but they like the idea of taxing and then using those resources well. We did a report just recently talking about the fact that the initial proposal to put all the money just into the general fund would make Ohio a complete outlier. There's not a single state in the country that doesn't earmark marijuana taxes for some special purposes. And then the kinds of special purposes, realistically, the way the initiative is written, the current law, is much more in keeping with what we see nationwide, with a variety of broad public purposes, again, community development, local community needs, substance abuse issues. We see that, lots of different forms of that, right? Sometimes it's putting money into parks, sometimes putting money into K-12 education or college scholarships. But we've seen nationwide lots of innovation about putting this money back into the community in a variety of ways. And you know, I suspect the instinct is, well, if you put it in the general fund, it'll come back to the community in some respect. But my sense is there are a lot of people that think, you know, you have much more transparency and you can monitor, you know, the resources more effectively if you have these dedicated lines of funding, which is what we see in just about every state, even though what exactly the money's going to varies a lot.
Now, Sarah Donaldson, the reporter who was here, who's been covering this, said that lawmakers she talked to said that voters voted to approve yes, recreational marijuana, they weren't voting to approve a tax structure. That's not that wasn't, you know, what they were campaigning on. What do you make of that, like, policy interpretation?
I think it's definitely right to say we shouldn't treat what was initially passed as set in stone and can't be adjusted based on what we're learning as things go. I think there's a little question to be raised about, oh, we just don't like the policy the voters voted on, and so we're changing the policy without any real direct evidence that, oh, the money would be better used in this place or that place, or that, you know, I've not heard any reports of home grow at 12 plants being a huge problem and moving it down to 6 is going to change that problem. And so I'm a little troubled by the instinct that we just treat the vote as kind of an up or down on marijuana, and then all the details are entirely for the legislature to rewrite, absent some clear basis for seeing what's not working or problematic about what the voters voted for. And I think, again, it was good to have that flexibility, because something like THC levels is something that has been a concern for public health experts for quite some time. That can make some sense, or at least as I see the policy debate there, that the General Assembly sensibly wants to weigh in on as public health evidence comes forward. But, you know, where the taxes go or how we're going to set taxes, I do think the voters care about being consistent, and we at least ought to see how that plays out over, my instinct would be, a couple years of data before we start changing just because we feel like changing.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about marijuana policy with Douglas Berman, Executive Director of the Drug Enforcement and Policy Center at Ohio State's Moritz College of Law. You mentioned the THC levels. Let's talk about them a little bit. This bill, as it is now, would lower them from 90% to 70%, if I'm saying that correctly.
I think lower the maximum that's allowed to be sold. So it doesn't, in fact, say you have to change your products here or there. It's just that very high THC product, which is at the 90%, which tends to be these waxes or shatters or other concentrates. Having it at 90%, there's considerable concern about that having the biggest public health risks. And so that would lower the max to 70%. My sense is that would be very much in keeping with what we see in other states around the country. Because
that's what I was going to say. So Sarah mentioned that she thought Michigan still had the 90% thing, but other states don't.
Yeah. So this has been an issue that's been, again, a big debate between policymakers, public health authorities who are trying to get THC levels down, and the industry, which generally doesn't want any restrictions on which products they can sell. And sometimes the higher concentrate products are their most popular, they can charge the most for. And so it really is a classic battle between industry that says, let us cater to our consumers regardless of what they want, and lawmakers and public health regulators who are saying, well, we're really worried about the health risks of those super high potency products. Let's just lower that cap somewhat. And we've seen a number of states around the country sort of move in that direction, but it's often been a hard legislative battle.
Pardon me. Now, not all municipalities in the state are on board with selling adult-use marijuana. Your center has tracked bans and moratoriums. There are more than 50 in place in Ohio. What are some reasons that you know of that certain, you know, townships or municipalities have decided to ban it?
Yeah, so we're actually over 100, and you can go to our website, and we try to track on pretty real time the moratoria that are in place. Among the things that I think was quite smart about the initiated legislation was it gave municipalities the chance to opt out of these businesses. And my sense is there's a wide array of reasons why some jurisdictions are opting out. Some, it's just we don't have the infrastructure to imagine, whether it's a dispensary or a grow facility in this local rural community, land is cheap here. Maybe people are going to want to come here and do this here and draw businesses, but we're just not confident at the outset that we're going to have the infrastructure we need to support those businesses in a sensible way. Let's put a moratorium in place, see how this plays out. And we can always revisit that. We can always repeal that. In other settings, I do think it's more sort of policy, you know, social mores. We just don't want one of those kinds of businesses here. And in some respects, I think it's quite comparable to what we see with zoning more generally, right? Mm-hmm. There may be a number of communities that they don't want the big box stores because of the traffic or the infrastructure challenges, or they don't want, you know, can't have casinos everywhere, but, you know, a variety of other, you know, kinds of stores. And I think the local control, this is an area where, because people have strong feelings, especially because, yes, it was a statewide vote, but you go to individual communities and you see they may have voted against reform in that community, to give them the opportunity to say, we don't want to have a business in here. And I do think that if we eliminate the tax revenue that would come with it, that was very much a part of, I think, the thinking of the initiative, is if we put taxes to the host communities that will make more communities more open to the idea that we should host one of these businesses. I do think that may be part of what the General Assembly is thinking about is, hey, we don't want to create incentives for more localities to be supportive of these businesses by taking the funding, direct funding away. You know, we give them even more reason to perhaps say no to having this in their community.
So, yeah, so some communities probably have it because they were like, well, we might as well keep the tax money, right? Yeah. But now if the tax money could just go to the general fund, then do you feel like more municipalities might say, well, then we don't want it anyway?
I think it's a possibility. Yeah. I think a lot of it is, and we've seen this in a variety of other states as well, there's an initial fear and uncertainty, which is understandable. You know, what are these businesses going to be like? How big are they going to be? Are they going to attract people from other parts of the state or even other states that, you know, won't be as concerned about respecting our community needs? And generally most states, and I think this is my sense of how Ohio is rolling out its industry, once these businesses are open and people see they're just like other businesses and they function, you know, sometimes even unseen in the community, there's less fear and concern about it. And so I do think it's possible that over time the industry will grow because of the stigmatization and concern about what having a business in your community might mean. But absolutely, if it means you also get added tax revenues of significant amounts, that makes it even easier for community leaders to say this is worth having, even if some people in our community are concerned what kind of message that sends. And again, I actually am, you know, very much in favor of let the localities decide that. Mm-hmm. I also think, and I mentioned the infrastructure issue, these businesses often do, you know, require a new road, some more policing, whatever the case may be, to sustain and get them started. And so I think the idea of having some of the tax revenue go directly back to the host communities makes a lot of sense and is a kind of equity that I wouldn't be surprised. And we've seen this already, a number of localities complaining about the proposal to get rid of the funding that they would get under issue two.
Now, a part of the reason we're doing this state by state, and we're talking about it state by state, is due to federal regulations. The Biden administration proposed moving marijuana from a Schedule I drug, which is like heroin, to a Schedule III drug, but that didn't go anywhere, right?
Well, it's sort of still going. It's actually currently under the administrative process in the Drug Enforcement Administration, and the challenge is figuring out now that the Trump administration is in charge whether they're going to want to move forward. Mm-hmm. President Trump on the campaign trail express support for rescheduling, but he's got other priorities right now. Yeah. We haven't seen yet what he's planning to do, and there's the marijuana industry spending a lot of time looking at his nominees to various departments to try to figure out if rescheduling is likely to go forward. I want to emphasize the point that even if rescheduling did go forward, all that making marijuana a Schedule III drug would do is probably make it easier for medical marijuana programs to develop in more sort of traditional medicinal type ways, whereas it doesn't automatically or even in any direct way legalize recreational marijuana programs. Now, there could be a cascade effect, and we've seen this with lots of different federal changes. Even a little movement on federal law often makes state law looser in a variety of ways and makes the industry more powerful to move forward with reforms. And so it could have a huge impact if we have rescheduling, but it's not going to overnight dramatically change the state law story that we're talking about.
Has there been any thought on the campaign trail or with the Trump administration on just blanket making it legal federally? Has that been said?
Certainly there are people he appointed to a variety of positions. I believe that JFK Jr., now the head of Health and Human Services, has been a vocal advocate for cannabis legalization, although in his hearings he said he would follow the science and what DEA was saying. I also believe, and it's worth mentioning here, especially Vivek Ramaswamy has been an advocate for marijuana legalization. I know he's talking about running for governor here in Ohio. Mm-hmm. And so, again, how making those kinds of claims in a variety of just general public settings versus now being in a position of authority to effect change, that often can be subject to lots of other issues. But it's where this field becomes so dynamic, because figuring out what's going to happen with federal law, how that impacts state law, what's going to happen with state law, and then we were talking about localities as well. Mm-hmm. Those are all different dimensions that impact, you know, where the drug is available and what the market looks like.
Well, Douglas Berman is going to stay with us, and we are going to take a break. But then coming up, we're going to talk with the organization that represents dispensaries and growers. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. We're talking today about recreational marijuana and proposed legislation that would make major changes to what voters approved in 2023. Still with us is Douglas Berman, Executive Director of the Drug Enforcement and Policy Center at Ohio State's Moritz College of Law. Thanks again for being here, Douglas.
Thank you.
Now, joining us now is David Bowling. He serves as the Executive Director of the Ohio Cannabis Coalition, also known as OCAN. Welcome, David.
Thanks, Amy. Thanks for having me.
So OCAN is a leading trade association representing licensed cultivators, processors, dispensaries, and testing labs. And then, David, before you joined OCAN, you did work as the deputy superintendent for the Division of Cannabis Control. So that is what is regulating this all, correct?
That's correct.
What made you decide to make the move from regulation to the trade organization?
So I have been around the medical program since 2019 and just honestly been fascinated by the evolving industry. So it's just exciting to be part of something that's totally new. I equate it to being the executive director of a spirits trade association at the time of Prohibition. It's just that cool. So
I'm sure the Division of Cannabis Control right now is like, they set up all these policies and now it's all going to change. I can only imagine the paperwork.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Okay. And I feel for them most with all of this Senate Bill 56 stuff that's going on right this second. So
in the previous segment, we talked about State Senator Steve Huffman's bill that will make some changes to the voter-approved marijuana law. And growers are among those who testified in opposition. So there's a lot of different provisions in the bill, but what do you see in Huffman's bill that is going to have the most impact on the industry? What are you most worried about?
Yeah, I mean, my biggest one right this second is I think these potency issues are something that needs to be dealt with. Potency and then the taxes, of course, as we've talked about today. Potency, to me, it's important to reframe the argument. I think it's a purity argument as opposed to a potency argument. When you set something at 90%, you're getting a pure, more clean product. And it has fewer additives, and that's, to me, that's a health conscious thing. So just reframing the argument is important to us. You know, we have dosage instructions on all of our packages. So even if it's at 90%, people know the limitations provided on the packaging so that you don't get too much. So, and our folks are conscious about that. So that's one of the biggest ones. And then the taxes, of course, we believe things should, we feel strongly about the host community fund. And as Doug was talking about, you know, that's just important that a lot of these folks have opened up their local municipalities because they anticipate receiving this revenue. So it's a big deal to us.
So let's talk about the taxes in a second, but let's start with the potency.
Yeah.
So Douglas mentioned that Michigan does have that 90% potency, but a lot of other states don't.
Correct.
Does Ohio want to be the leader in high concentrate marijuana?
I don't know that we want to be the leader in high concentrate marijuana. But again, just going back to reframing the argument, I think that the reframing of the argument could happen all over the country. Like I said, it's purity, not potency.
Okay, I'm using the wrong word for you. Yes, I got it. Okay, so let's talk about the taxes for a little bit. So the tax structures part got taken out of Huffman's bill. So this bill that'll be voted on maybe in the next week or so and then go to the House,
yep,
for more debate doesn't have the tax in it.
Correct.
But the whole tax issue is now going to Governor DeWine's budget. So Governor DeWine wants to double the tax from 10% to 20%. Huffman's bill, before everything got moved around, was going to take it to 15%. Are you wanting to keep it at the 10%?
I think we're for 10%. And let me just add in that when we think about the taxes, it's 10% plus sales tax. So really, we're at 17%, which, as Doug mentioned, is on par with about everyone else. We don't want to be the highest, and I don't know that we want to be the lowest, but at 70%, we're pretty much middle of the pack.
Okay. And so you would go before the budget committee and try to lobby to keep it middle of the pack.
You got it.
Okay. So then, but where the tax money goes, Are you in favor of where it was in the initiated statute?
Yes.
Okay. So Douglas in the previous segment outlined all the different groups that are supposed to get parts of this tax. Are you hearing mostly from the local municipalities, though?
Yes.
Okay.
That is the real outrage, I would say.
Okay. So what would happen if it goes into the general fund?
I think at that point, the General Assembly could decide exactly what they want to do with it. And, of course, change that over time, depending on where the needs are. And I understand that that's their desire. But at least for a period of time, I think the host community fund is important. These municipalities are starting to rely on it. So,
yeah, what are you hearing? What do they want to do with the tax money?
You know, I don't know that I've heard specific things.
It's too new.
It's too new right this second. So, but they all have ideas, I'm sure.
Everyone will take more money.
I do believe the language is fairly broad enough that they can kind of decide how they want to spend it.
Douglas Berman, with the executive director of the Drug Enforcement and Policy Center at Ohio State's Moritz College of Law. When you hear about this idea of the money going into the general fund versus these local communities, whenever you study it in other states, are local communities using it for anything in particular that's been really good?
Absolutely. We've seen a variety of local uses. I know in Colorado there was one community that specifically focused on college scholarships for certain economically disadvantaged individuals, and so they were actually making a big deal about the fact that, look at all these people who have gotten to go to college because we have a local dispensary and the revenue that comes from that. Other states, we've done a study that highlighted a lot of them put it into the local general fund once they have their locality, but that then goes to pay for a bunch of services that enables that locality to keep their other taxes lower, right? I think that's the part that's kind of especially notable here is these localities are not, generally speaking, hey, we need this money and, you know, well, if we don't have this money, we won't be able to do these 10 new things. It's if we have this money, we'll be able to do more of these other things that our community wants us to do. And some of them, again, are earmarking it for certain special purposes. But, you know, the norm has tended to be more public safety related issues, mm-hmm. sometimes more substance abuse issues, because those are kind of rightly seen as the concerns that the community has when a dispensary opens in an area or that, you know, marijuana becomes more available to a local community.
And David Bowling, executive director of OCAN, let's talk about Ohio versus neighboring states. So we keep comparing to Michigan. Ohio saw potential customers heading to Michigan, where recreational marijuana is cheaper and has been legal longer. Do you see this bill as causing more of that, Matt, that people just keep going to Michigan?
Yeah, I think so. Granted the taxes are out of it right this second, but certainly the potency thing seems to be an issue for people, especially the medical patients. So to the extent that they're not able to get the dose that actually works for them, they're going to go to Michigan.
Yeah, so tell me about that. So, I mean, we're talking about this potency versus purity idea, but for medical marijuana, some people need it to be at a certain level, right?
Correct, that's okay. Right. And at very high milligram limits, too, as well. So,
And they've been used to that for a while, right? Because medical marijuana, how long have I'm blanking on how long medical marijuana?
sales started January of 2019.
Okay.
So that was the first sale in Ohio.
Okay. So medical marijuana has been around for a while.
Yeah.
All right.
And they are incredibly used to it, and we do hear from those folks quite a bit.
Now, the bill would merge states' medical and recreational marijuana programs under the Division of Cannabis Control. That seems like a housekeeping issue. Is there a benefit to consolidating that together?
Here's the issue with that is that it was already done under House Bill 33 in the budget. So the two programs are one, and they've been operating since December of 2022 under the adopting rules under, you know, 3780 and 3796. They're functioning already under this program. Mm. That's part of the reason why this bill is just kind of untimely.
We talked in the last segment, Douglas and I talked about how we haven't been selling recreational marijuana for very long to know exactly even how much tax revenue, how many people are buying it, what the potential for the industry even is. Do you feel like, I mean, if you could say, Senator Huffman, could you wait and like give us a minute? Is
that? Yeah, I mean, that would probably be my statement. Mm-hmm. Let's just sit tight here for a second. And that's probably true with cannabis as a whole.
Now, I know you weren't part of the effort to get issue 2 passed, yep. but do you know why the organizers went with an initiated statute instead of the constitutional amendment?
I think it's probably exactly what we're talking about here. Cannabis is evolving, and so they wanted the ability to change it as needed, and that gets difficult if it's enshrined in the Constitution.
Yeah, I can jump in on that, when folks may remember, although they may want to forget, that there was a full legalization initiative back in 2015 called Responsible Ohio that was cast as a constitutional amendment. And it made it very easy for people who said, I might be for cannabis reform, but I just don't think having this written into the Constitution very specifically with all these details is the right way to go. And so I sense that the initiate statute route was an effort to sort of say, hey, look, legislatures, you don't need to be against this. You'll be able to modify it, you know, and so don't be as vocal in opposition. And I think that kind of worked a little bit. I certainly sensed that there wasn't as vocal an opposition to this statute. Again, I think because the legislatures knew, hey, we'll get to rewrite the taxes and all the other provisions if we want to ultimately. And so I think it was a strategic choice that ended up being part of why it got passed.
I can't say for certain, but Doug's certainly right, or most likely right, that they considered the Responsible Ohio failure in determining that initiated statute was the right approach.
Now, let's talk about the number of dispensaries. This bill caps it at 350. Did the initiated statute have a cap?
It did not.
Okay. So does the number of dispensaries we have matter? I don't know how many off the top of my head Michigan has, unless Douglas knows that.
Yeah, I don't have that number. Yeah. We have 130 now, I think.
Mm-hmm. We have 130 right this second, roughly, and more online coming. So we're going to be at roughly 300 by the time all of these 10B dispensaries open, which is the 37, 80, 10B licenses.
This license that you're saying is that a place that is with medical marijuana, or is that the separate recreational only?
Both medicinal, dual use is what I call them.
Okay.
The 350 cap is likely a concern about oversaturation. Mm-hmm. I don't think I can sit here and say whether 350 is right, 400 is right, 450 is right.
It's just plucking a number out of the sky.
I mean, you look at state liquor agencies across the state of Ohio. There's probably 490 or so. So if you're using that as a model, maybe that's the number.
Okay. Now, the Division of Cannabis Control recently had a presentation for your membership, David, on how to prepare for an inspection. What are the rules like for recreational marijuana? How often do inspections take place, or is it still? Are we still in the "this is new" phase?
At a minimum, annually, mm-hmm. But then with the division ramping up enforcement, they can be as frequent as quarterly. Mm-hmm. So, but again, we're still kind of trying to figure out what enforcement looks like under this adult use regime. So, I think they're probably working through that.
And the presentation that they did for your membership on how to prepare for an inspection, was it just they're probably used to them if they're a medical marijuana place. They've had them for a while. So is it different the way an inspection is done for the recreation?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay.
Not to my knowledge.
And there was a time, did they have to have like separate cash registers or something for medical marijuana and recreation? Is that still a thing? Places where you check?
All of that, since adult use sales started, has been handled at the point of sale system. So mm-hmm. there's a company called Dutchie that a lot of folks use, and they developed a way at the point of sale system to determine whether it's adult use or medical. So there's and one cash register.
Technology can fix everything.
Yeah. And that's worth emphasizing, getting back to the tax issue, is that one big distinction between being in the medical program or just buying recreationally is the medical users, they still pay the sales tax, but they don't pay the special 10% excise tax. And so one of the things that I think is quite possible, we've seen a decline in the number of people registered under the medical program as the adult use program has come online, and that's pretty common in other states as well. But if the tax were to go up and there was even a bigger differential in price between the medical product, because they don't pay the tax, and the recreational product, we may see more people going back into the medical system in order to avoid the increase in taxes.
Now, this bill seems poised to pass in the Senate, and then it'll move to the House. What is your organization going to be doing to lobby lawmakers in the House for potential changes?
The way it's been, or it's, I think it's going to be passed out of the Senate, I think the bill's in a much better place than when it started, when it was as introduced. We don't have a ton of changes left, I think, that we'd be pushing for in the House. But going back to my previous point, big picture here, the bill's untimely, unnecessary. The biggest thing we're going to be pushing for in the House is separate these out, 3780 doesn't belong with 3796. It makes it difficult to understand. It's difficult for practitioners. It's difficult for compliance teams to handle. So what is separating?
So those
revised code chapters.
Okay.
Whereas Senate Bill 50, sorry.
You have numbers.
My legal hat on for a second. separating them out is important. It's just cleaner that way. And I think it's a much simpler bill. I think the House folks can make all of their policy concerns happen, changes that they want happen, just by revising 3780 and 3796 separately.
Okay. Well, we will bring you back and see if that happens, right? Thank you to David Bowling, Executive Director of the Ohio Cannabis Coalition, also known as OCAN. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And Douglas Berman, Executive Director of the Drug Enforcement and Policy Center at Ohio State's Moritz College of Law. Thank you, Douglas.
Thank you.
And this has been All Sides with Amy Jurevich on 89.7 NPR News.